Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is the 24th of January, 2013 here in Japan. It is the 23rd back in the United States, where today I'm joined on the line by Mickey Huff, who's the director of Project Censored and on the board of directors of the Media Freedom Foundation. He's also a professor of social science and history at Diablo Valley College, and he is also the co-chair of the history department there at Diablo Valley College in the San Francisco Bay Area. Mickey Huff, it's the first time you're on the program, so welcome to the Corbett Report. Thank you for taking the time.
Thanks so much for having me on. I've been following your program for some time, and you know, we've been meaning to touch base, and I'm, again, honored to be on.
Excellent. Well, I'm honored to have you here. And of course, we have had Peter Phillips, the former director of Project Censored, on this program in the past. So I'm assuming most of the people out there will be familiar with the work of Project Censored at projectcensored.org. But let's talk a little bit about your own history with Project Censored and how you got involved with it.
Well, I've been involved with Project Censored I met Peter over a decade ago and at a media conference in San Francisco. And I became active with a group called RetroPoll that did alternative polling. We basically tried to do correlative analysis on with poll and poll statistics, and I worked with Dr. Mark Saper there as a co-director. And again, what RetroPoll tried to show was how that corporate media polling really helped manipulate public opinion and help fashion public opinion rather than actually reflect public opinion. And again, I'd been a longtime follower of Project Censored. I had the first book that came out in 93. Of course, the project went back to 1976, but the first published book was Censored 93. And when I moved out to California and met Peter and was doing this media work, it eventually seemed like a really logical connection. It really felt right. And so when I left RetroPoll in mid-2000s, I started being a faculty evaluator with Project Censored, looking at stories, doing events, and so forth. Eventually, I became the associate director of Project Censored in time for Censored 2008 when Dr. Andy Lee Roth was there and leaving. Subsequently, Dr. Andy Lee Roth has come back. He is our current associate director once again. So he's back in the mix. I've been director for about 3 years, and I'm working on my fifth book with Project Censored. We're now working on Censored 2014 for release late this year. We just released Censored 2013 last fall. So yeah, my connection has been, again, growing, and it's obviously significantly increased since becoming director a few years ago. And Peter Phillips and I actually have our own radio show on Pacifica every Friday morning, KPFA. So Project Censored's been doing a lot of growing, a lot of expanding. Have over 20 colleges and university affiliates doing research with us. We actually had Brian Covert, a journalist and professor in Japan, doing work with us, 6 or 7 other countries. So things have been going, I guess I shouldn't say, well for Project Censored in that regard, because one would hope that if the corporate media or the media at large and journalism as a profession was in a healthier state, there wouldn't be a need for Project Censored. But unfortunately, we're doing 400 or 500 page books a year, radio shows every week, and certainly, as you know, James, from your own experience in your own show, there's no shortage of things that are undercovered.
Unfortunately not, and exactly right. This is the type of thing that I imagine you'd prefer not to have to be able to do at all, but unfortunately the work is there and you are doing an excellent job of it year in and year out. So let's talk a little bit about 2013 and some of the stories that stood out from you for you from the previous year that you highlighted in Project Censored 2013.
Sure. Well, people might know us from the top censored stories or the top 25 censored stories. The San Francisco Bay Guardian does our top 10 every year, and it gets picked up by a lot of weeklies around the U.S. and so forth, independent weeklies. When I came in, one of the things I did as director, Peter Phillips and I, we still work together very closely. We began to change the way we worked. We started at Sonoma State University, and we're still there, but we're also on many other college campuses working with people. And various professors and students from all over, literally hundreds of students in each of the books. And again, we wanted to really expand our media literacy base. And even though we still have this list of stories, we wanted to have a more overarching analytical framework. So what we do is we now cluster the stories thematically. So even though we still have our national judges that vote what they think the significance of this list is, we have tended to move toward an analysis that connects the dots, because we think that that's what good journalism does. It connects the dots between stories, because if you go through our list and look at the stories, you may miss some of the connections that are really there underneath them. So I guess I could pick a few of the stories from the list, and I'll mention their numbers, but one of my stronger feelings when I got to the project was that I understand the marketing angle of it, and certainly our publishers at Seven Stories Press in New York, you know, that's certainly a tag for us, the top stories, the number one story, and so on. But, you know, I really think all the stories have their own life, their own significance, their own importance, and sometimes people get caught up in how could that be story number three when this is story number seven, or 10 should be one, and so on. And I think that's a distraction, because I think all of these things are things people should really try to be paying attention to. One of the key themes from the Censored 2013 book, of course, is manifest in the cover. Those of the listeners that have seen the Censored 2013 cover has a cropped picture of the infamous Officer Pike from the University of California, Davis, spraying student protesters with military-grade pepper spray. And the top story of the year, and several similar stories, relate to the signs of an emerging police state. So this is certainly, you're no stranger to this topic at the Corbett Report, but this is the police state and civil liberties cluster that takes a look at all of our top stories that dealt with this issue. So we have articles from James Bamford on the NSA building the country's largest spy center. We have Spencer Ackerman and Noah Schachtman on FBI memos that say agents can suspend the law. That was from Wired magazine. Truthdig, Chris Hedges, on his lawsuit against the Obama administration and the National Defense Authorization Act, which is still something in the news and just recently funding reauthorized, and the so-called Feinstein Amendment, which was designed to allegedly restrict the use of NDAA against American citizens where the military could detain indefinitely American citizens. The Feinstein Amendment was struck down by John McCain. So that didn't even get in as the change. And actually, Project Censor, the Media Freedom Foundation, recently helped put together a call for, it was an ad in the Nation magazine, a call to repeal NDAA and raise awareness about the significance of NDAA, which, by the way, was signed over a year ago under the cloak of darkness, essentially, on New Year's Eve. So many people are unaware of NDAA, what NDAA is, and we think that these are really significant stories, civil liberties stories. And one thing that we have remarked upon, both in the book and in our radio programs, is it seemed that there was more public outcry about some of these draconian unilateral executive, now the NDAA is a law, but there were a series of unilateral executive sort of orders that were passed that, again, under the Bush administration, seemed to draw great ire among some members of the public. Attention was called to it, but we're wondering where some of the liberal protest has gone under the Obama administration, where these things have not only continued, in some cases they've been expanded, like the Military Commissions Act expanded by NDAA, the drone war expanding, indefinite detention issues expanding, Guantanamo not closed. these are real problems, and they're ongoing problems. So we have oft lamented that the protest of these civil liberty infractions seems to have evaporated somewhat with the election and now re-election of Barack Obama. And if your listeners wish to go to the website, projectcensored.org, all of our stories from this year's book are there, can be seen for free, linking to all of the original articles. We also update year-round all of the things we're considering for the next cycle on our Media Freedom International site, so we urge people to go there. We ask people if they would like to support this kind of academic research, vetting, media literacy for students and so on, that they could maybe become monthly supporters. But we still offer all this information for people. And the books, by the way, as you know, they have so much more information in them than just the top stories, including Project Censored International. We talk about shifting baselines, uncensoring our own histories. We still have chapters on junk food news and news abuse. So we're, as stated at the outset here, as busy as ever, too busy, at least in my estimation. But as you also stated, it's something that really needs to be done, and journalism is in a real serious state of disrepair. But there are many independent journalists and individuals that are doing stellar work, and we at Project Censored like to honor that, maybe give longer legs or bigger megaphone if we can to that. And we certainly hope that there is an independent journalistic revival in the United States in the days to come.
Well, it's quite important to point out, as you do there, that there is a thread that runs through a lot of the stories. Even, of course, there are the stories that are directly connected thematically, not only the signs of an emerging police state, of course, sitting there at number one, but that, of course, runs through a number of different stories. H.R. 347 would make many forms of nonviolent protest illegal, and other stories along those lines. But, of course, then there are the stories that are related structurally to those types of stories. And I think another of the main threads running through 2013 has to do with the financial aspects of the world economy in various different forms, including the first Federal Reserve audit reveals trillions loaned to major banks, a small network of corporations run the global economy, and one at 23 that particularly catches my eye, or sorry, 22, Wachovia Bank laundered money for Latin American drug cartels. I think you're right. All of these things are of a piece, and they do fit together in ways that I think are more important than the separateness of the stories, as it were, would indicate. Can you talk about some of those themes and what is really emerging from this picture that you're painting?
Well, you know, overall, I think that the theme, there is a general theme, I would suggest. And a couple of years ago, I did a chapter with Peter Phillips. A lot of criticism over the years of Project Censored talks about our bias, and because we cover some very controversial stories and we suggest there are significant things people ought to know about without even taking a real stand on some of these issues, we've been referred to as conspiratorial. We've been referred to as reactionary or progressive or, you know, a liberal front group. I mean, you name it, we've been called it. And often they're contradictory claims. But we did an analysis of our own stories over the last two presidential administrations. And at that time, Obama was newly in, but we looked at the Bush and Clinton years, and we found equal stories about the same problems, the same topics. And so what Project Censored does is I think what the free press as a principle is designed to do, and that's tell the public what's really going on, to paraphrase George Seldes from the 20th century, and to really tell the public what people in power are doing, what's happening with their tax money, who's forming public policy, who has influence over the system. So we do have a bias. Our bias is in favor of a truly free press, one that does not censor or condone censorship. We are adamant supporters of academic freedom. We are also, I'm sitting on the committee for organizers on Banned Books Week, working with the American Library Association, the National Coalition Against Censorship, various groups. So we're really expanding a lot of what we do. And I think that all of the stories collectively are about freedom of information. And more specifically, James, I think, and this comes out in the second section of our book this year, on what we call a truth emergency. So we live in a society that is awash in information but seems to have a paucity of understanding of what it all means. We talk about deconstructing narratives of power to reclaim the common good. And we've increasingly been doing work on the significance of the commons, a reclamation of the commons in the public interest. So I think that all the stories that we do every year are stories that fit under that type of rubric. And I can understand why various groups would be unhappy with that agenda. I can understand certainly why many powerful forces would be. Peter Phillips and Kimberly Suero have a whole chapter in our new book on exposing the 1%, meaning we actually go through and see who are these people? Who are these banks? Who are their shareholders? Where do they sit on boards of directors? In other words, we do what the great sociologist C. Wright Mills did in The Power Elite. We go through, we don't just provide theoretical framework, we name names. We give people a place to really focus their interest, their ire, their activism. And if we really mean to be a society where there is a representative government of, by, and for the people, not just the corporations as fictitious persons that use money as free speech, then I think we really owe it to ourselves to really examine the crisis of journalism and move beyond media reform, which is another thing that we've sometimes been dinged for over the years, is that, you know, it's good if some groups wish to attenuate the dials at the FCC and put pressure on government agencies to regulate ownership. We think that's important. But we also think there's a long enough track record, and again, our history of our collective stories illustrate this, that the corporate media isn't going to cover these things, and the corporate media isn't going to be reformed. So we need to be the media ourselves. We need to grow independent journalism. We need to support each other, not compete with each other. And I think we need to show mutual respect even when we disagree on things, because I think a lot of independent journalists and organizations have at the heart a similar mission. So I think collectively our stories have this mission of informing the public to attempt to create a more just world.
Well, of course, one of the ironies that you run into at the helm of something like Project Censored is that not only are you dealing with censorship of other media entities, but you're also dealing with censorship of the things that you yourselves are covering. So, for example, back in, I believe it was 2011, you and Peter Phillips co-authored an op-ed on the subject of state crimes against democracy that was intended for publication through the Institute for Policy Studies, which was rejected because it was, I guess, a little too controversial. Let's talk about that and some of the reception that Project Censored itself has had in various media outlets over the years.
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, you go back to our founder, Carl Jensen, and, you know, Carl Jensen once said, you know, one of the most censored stories in the last several decades since he was involved in this project has been Project Censored. I mean, we've not been covered in the New York Times. We've had small blurbs in the LA Times. I mean, we don't get a lot of attention in corporate media. Occasionally, we'll see ABC Radio or, you know, some of that, or NPR and radio and this kind of a thing. And, of course, we have our Pacifica show, but Pacifica is hardly, the type of megaphone that these major corporate types are. But that makes sense because we're perceived as hostile to many of those in corporate media. And again, I think there's another message there that we would rather promote, and that's we're simply advocating for more responsible journalism overall. And this year we were doing a story on the Moss Crawlers, and the NYPD work with Department of Homeland Security. I almost have to chuckle or trademark when I say that. It's so absurd. But nevertheless, these groups were working together to infiltrate Muslim groups and Arab groups, and they spent all kinds of taxpayer money, violated people's civil liberties, and found zero criminals, zero terrorists, nothing going on. I mean, again, it would be a joke if it weren't so tragic. But that was actually picked up by the New York Times. And we said that in the introduction of our 2013 book. We said, hey, look, these people won a Pulitzer Prize for this reporting. Let's do more of that. Do you have a slow news day? Instead of covering Lindsay Lohan, why don't you pick up a copy of the Censored book or go to our website and start picking up leads of other great independent journalists, investigative studies. And look, we're talking about stories that have roots here. We're talking, you know, I did a chapter in the book this year with Laurel Krauss on the Kent State shootings, and new information that's come forward that shows the complicity of the Guard and the FBI and provocateurs, very relevant and germane to what's going on with the FBI and Occupy, where it's now been shown in even some documents, even though most have been redacted, that the FBI was involved in infiltrating groups, talking about assassinating Occupy leaders, etc. This is very important contextually. And this is also then again why I think Project Censored sometimes draws the ire of various groups, and particularly at times even purportedly progressive free speech leaning groups. And that's because we go wherever the stories go. We go where the facts go, and we go where other news outlets don't seem to be interested. And unfortunately, there have been what we consider, by the way, very professional and responsible journalistic outlets, places like Democracy Now!, the Progressive Magazine, even Counterpunch, and places like the Institute for Policy Studies, for example, they just won't cover certain issues. And to us, that's baffling. I mean, I understand the psychology of it, and I understand that dealing with controversial issues sometimes gets us into murky waters. Of course, there is the fallacious game of guilt by association and conflation and straw person and ad hominem fallacies and so on. And some folks would rather just not deal with some of the serious controversial issues of our day. But at Project Censored, you know, part of our mission is we don't have a litmus test for that. We don't have a litmus test that said, oh, that's too controversial. What we say is this important? Is this factually relevant? Is it transparently sourced? Should we be considering this? That's very different than saying, here's the truth, eat it. Here's our truth stick, let us beat you with it. But because we've sometimes championed terribly unpopular propositions, we have ourselves been attacked and accused of being irresponsible, which I would argue, and I would debate anyone in public on this matter. I think we, even if we've made mistakes, sometimes we've admitted it, but I think most of the times our work stands and stands on its own and stands over time. The decision in particular that you mentioned about writing state crimes and state and corporate crimes against democracy, that Peter and I had been researching and has been part of our research with Lance DeHaven Smith, James Tracy, who's actually also been in the news lately for reasons that he'd probably rather he not be. We can get to that later, maybe. But the state crimes against democracy piece was simply giving theoretical framework and historical academic analysis to understanding actual conspiracies against the public committed by private corporations or members in government colluding to benefit themselves at the expense of others. Now, it's interesting historically that whenever we find these things out, they're not called conspiracies anymore. They're called Watergate, or they're called Iran-Contra. But when there's plenty of evidence to show that something is wrong, but we don't exactly know exactly where things are going on, then you're called a reckless conspiracy theorist. And the Institute for Policy Studies, again, despite some of the great work they've done over the years, they took over the op-eds and cartoons, the op-ed pieces that Peter was writing, and we followed all their guidelines and all their rules, and we wrote about SCADs and included the problems, academic peer-reviewed reports showing problems with 9/11 research, 9/11 official reports, contradictions to the 9/11 NIST and FEMA studies, and we said this should be reported. This should be seen as something that is taken into consideration. We didn't say this is exactly what's going on and every other source is wrong. But the IPS folks went round and round with us and said, well, that's not why we told you to not do it, and this isn't what – they trying to come up with every reason they could. And ultimately, we had an email from someone that worked there that said, yep, we're not doing it because you mentioned 9/11 and we don't publish stuff on 9/11. And that was it, the end. When we went to submit our next one, they said, you're no longer writing here. And we said, well, that's interesting. And then I wrote about it in the 2011 book, and they have since publicly denied it. We publicly spoke at their facility in Washington, D.C. after this happened, and many of the people that worked there were never even told that it happened. So, again, this violates the very principle of free speech and freedom of expression, and we think it's an embarrassment to an organization like IPS that has such a stellar track record reporting on so many other things, and we wish that they would come up with some type of antidote to their allergies to covering controversial issues, because these are very important things. Bonnie Faulkner on Guns and Butter covered us on this on KPFA Pacifica Radio. Of course, we covered it ourselves. But you're right. We have run into trouble as an organization when we talk about election fraud. And recently, one of our affiliate researchers, James Tracy, was in the news because he was challenging the corporate narratives of the Sandy Hook shootings, basically saying that the corporate media fail in their responsibility to tell people what's going on to understand it and highlight the emotional trauma and turn things into a circus environment. And of course, he has been subsequently accused of saying that it's a hoax and it never happened. And he's been quoted terribly out of context. And even if I don't agree sometimes with some of the speculations Tracy might make, he's certainly protected under academic freedom to write on a personal blog about it. And again, his work over the years has stood on its own. And I think in America, we have a real serious problem as a culture where we try to play gotcha journalism and where people aren't allowed to have controversial views, or they make mistakes, or maybe they delve into a realm of something that is more speculation than critical thinking. But I don't think that there should be such harsh punishment for these things. And I wish that the self-appointed censors or gatekeepers, as they hate being called, would just simply allow there to be honest, legitimate debates about what's known about problems with vaccines, problems with 9/11 research, problems with weather modification. You know, these aren't all outer space, crazy land stories. There are very serious academics and peer-reviewed studies showing many inconvenient truths about many of these areas that are just unfortunately poo-pooed among the establishment left. And I frankly find the consensus among some of these groups appalling, given that I think that left politics really is about exposing power and speaking truth to power. And I really just wish that we could have a more civil dialogue and mutual respect for each other, even when we disagree about some of the minutiae and the specifics. Because ultimately, I think, again, we all have similar missions in terms of pro-academic freedom, pro-free speech, anti-censorship. And I think, again, I think we do a disservice when people don't like what Project Censor does to attack us, to call us names, to censor us. I mean, it just seems ironically absurd to me.
It certainly does. Well, you make a lot of good points there, not the least of which being, I think, that the gatekeeper function that has been played by the establishment media and even parts of the so-called alternative media for so long, I think, is falling apart in this age of the internet. And I think it is becoming less and less of an argument that people take seriously when they say that controversial ideas shouldn't be raised or shouldn't be talked about, because people obviously gravitate towards them and there is a societal conversation taking place through the social media and on the internet that I don't think has taken place on a societal level before because of that establishment gatekeeper function. So I think the game rules of the game are changing, and it's certainly changing because of organizations like Project Censored. As I say, I'm sure that most of my listeners have checked out Project Censored before, if only because I've mentioned it every single year when the new report comes out. But at any rate, if you haven't, please go projectcensored.org and tell people once again how they can tune into the KPFA show.
We're on KPFA every week. We're rebroadcast on the Progressive Radio Network and No Lies Radio, several other stations. But we're on live Friday morning, 8 a.m. then Pacific time, 94.1 FM, kpfa.org. All the shows are archived permanently at projectcensored.org. And again, we really enjoy that opportunity to get this these kinds of stories out in a more real-time fashion. Certainly the book is academic in its construct and I think serves a really important purpose in literate societies. But, you know, again, where we are, like you're saying, James, it's a lot of internet, it's a lot of reporting in that way, it's a lot of live FaceTime, it's a lot of really trying to get to people. You know, again, I mentioned Amy Goodman before in Democracy Now!, and we have criticized some of her reporting and some of her coverage, but she reaches a wide audience. We think she does a good job on many, many stories. But again, it's interesting that because we focused 5% or some odd of our time covering things that some of these people don't like, we seem to just be discarded as being not worthy. And I think our annual publication every year, the people that we work with every year, I think that really speaks volumes to the fact that, like you said, I think we're doing important work. Abby Martin over at Breaking the Set does really important work. She's on our board. There's just so many people out there, James, that are doing important work in terms of free press and journalism, trying to tell people what's going on. I think that we work together much better than we work apart. And this is why we have this construct of state crime against democracy. It gives us responsible ways to talk about controversial affairs. But what we do see, unfortunately, is more of a covering up of strange things and even behavior that we would expect at CNN or Fox, where major contributors or advertisers and so on have an adverse effect on free speech by saying who gets on and who doesn't and that type of thing. You know, we have seen that at other stellar shows like Democracy Now!, where, with the John Pilger film, The War You Don't See, was canceled by the Landon Foundation over a year ago for their showing. And Goodman talked about the Landon Foundation in the showing, but didn't give Pilger a chance to tell his side of the story and didn't divulge to the audience that the Landon Foundation gave her $375,000 over the previous 2 years. I know that that's probably going to ruffle people's feathers and people are going to say, well, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say it. I'm not saying anything nice or not nice. I'm just raising the questions about those types of programs that Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting raise about corporate media every year in their Fear and Favor report. So again, you know, to quote George Carlin, let's not have a double standard here. One standard will do just fine, James. And I appreciate the work that you're doing over the years, and certainly I think you would adhere to that standard as well.
Absolutely. Well, I certainly think that our ideas of what the media should be about definitely are on the same page. So hopefully we can continue this conversation at a later date. Mickey Huff, ProjectCensored.org. Always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, James. Best wishes.